number one sports site in the world.
Live from the Quick and Wound studios of the Yahoo Sports Radio headquarters. You know what they say.
You know what they say. See a broad to get that booty act. Leg it down. Smack him. Yeah.
Oh, God. Nighttime is the right time. It's Tony D on Yahoo Sports Radio.
If we die, we die together.
And yahoosportsradio.com. Tony D with you. Getting interactive, recapping everything that's going down. And giving you your first chance to react. Nighttime on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Yahoo Sports Radio.
Is now.
Oh, got to be.
This is what we do. From the Quick and Wound Studios, here's Tony D.
So a huge vote took place at an NCAA convention that allows the Big 12 to have a college football conference championship game. Currently, they don't because they have 10 teams. But now a ruling has been in place that allows them to do so as long as they play a round-robin schedule during the regular season. So everybody has to play everybody. And if they do that, the Big 12 is capable of hosting a Big 12 title game, despite not having enough teams or no divisions for that matter. Now, on the surface, this seems like a good idea. We kind of lamented the fact that they didn't have the one last year when TCU and Baylor were left out of the college football playoff. But if I'm Bob Bowlesby, do I go down that road of having a conference title game? On the surface, again, it seems like something that would be necessary given that in this year, the winners of the four conferences were given spots. And luckily, Oklahoma had one because not only did they win the Big 12, but had a decent enough record to be ranked in the top four. That's not always going to be the case. You can win the Big 12 with a two-loss record and not be in the top four. Somebody else could take that spot. So the conference championship game, allows you to have that extra game that you can highlight when everybody's focusing on the great conference championship games and you're playing regular season games that may not have the same impact. I would tell the Big 12 to chill for a second. I think they're following suit in that. Really study this before you figure out if this is something you want to do. In the end, I think money prevails. It always does. So whether or not it's going to be good to get into the college football playoff or not is going to eventually become irrelevant if the money is there to be made in a conference championship game. In fact, I almost guarantee at some point they're going to do this. If you're allowed to do something that's going to make you more money, you do it, especially in sports. You'll just do it. But if I, in a perfect world, where money wasn't an object, wink, wink, I would advise against this for right now until I absolutely saw its pitfalls and potentials. Because I think that there is this belief that here was TCU and Baylor back in 2014, and they were playing games and they were top of the polls. And then at the end of the season, when Ohio State was beating up on Wisconsin, they were beating up lesser opponents. So the conversation became, well, the Big 12 doesn't have a conference title game. This is what they get. This is what they deserve. They should have had one. But when you peel more layers of the onion, you realize that really wasn't the case. That Ohio State, who was the last team to get in, was really an impressive team. And maybe more so than Baylor or TCU. And a conference title game may not have changed that at all. Conference title games are scary because as much as they give you a benefit when you need it, they also can really hurt you when you need it. And under the old BCS system, we saw that a couple of times. How many teams did we see go through the regular season, finish out strong, then get to that title game and lose their shot at participating in the national championship game because they lost that conference title game, that extra game on their schedule? It's devastating when it happens. But we've also seen teams benefit. You don't have to go back that far in the schedules, in the years, to find teams who benefited from a strong performance in their conference title game that led credence to their ability to go play for a national title. I'll give you an example. The Florida Gators, in their first run at a national title, won the SEC championship by beating Arkansas. And it was a time where USC had fell to UCLA and there were a couple of other losses. But Florida was able to gain some traction with that victory, sell their program, and get into the national championship game against Ohio State. Alabama has used really strong showings in Atlanta to boost up their resume. Because, you know, Alabama has gone a couple of years with a loss and boom, go win the SEC. Would it help the Big 12? Well, here's the danger. It does help when you don't play the opponent and the opponent carries some weight. But it also can hurt if you go through your regular season unbeaten and you're playing an opponent for the second time, which is guaranteed to happen in the Big 12 title game. No matter who you are, no matter who you face, because of the round-robin nature of their season with 10 teams, they're going to play a team again. Now, if you beat a team 38-0 in the first round, but then beat them 37-36 in the second round, you might lose points with that, even though you merged victorious. Who knows? There are a few pitfalls. But like anything else in life, there are risks and rewards, and I think for the Big 12, I would hold off on this for just a second. But I think in the end, they're going to do this. And maybe in the end, it's for the best. Conference championship games drive me crazy. Because, a South Carolina fan, as a guy who wanted his school so badly to have success in football, getting to that game in Atlanta is a big deal. They did it a couple of years ago when they faced Cam Newton at Auburn, got throttled by the Tigers, but nevertheless, it was a really good accomplishment. The fact that Steven Garcia, the quarterback at the time, ended up getting in trouble for having some girls in his room when he wasn't supposed to. But it was still a great accomplishment for the school. Even though it let Auburn shine, is something you're pretty proud of. But if you're looking at its viability for the national title, it is not something you have to have. Play a good regular season. Play tough. Get a winning record. Get something decent. Win your conference. You could just get in, like Oklahoma, you could get in on that merit alone. You may not need that extra game. Every time you need that, for every team that's needed that conference championship win, there's a bunch that have been hurt because of it. So it could go either way. But in the end, money is going to prevail. 800-777-2907. I think it's a big win for the Big 12. I really do. It's not because they're going to have one, because now they have the ability to have one and they don't have to expand. If they don't want to expand, they don't have to. They don't want to bring in more teams, they don't have to. If they want to, that's an option. If they don't, they can sit tight. So if they wanted the best of both worlds, if they like having a 10-team conference and they like having a conference championship game, they get to do both. They don't have to add a Tulsa or a Houston or someone along those lines. They don't have to do those kind of things now. They can just go, we like where we are. We like the teams we have. And we get to have a conference title game. 800-777-2907. The news of the Cleveland Browns hiring Hugh Jackson, I think, is a big deal because it's a great hire. It is a really, really good hire. It is something I'm surprised that Cleveland was able to pull off. I'm a little surprised that Hugh Jackson chose the Cleveland Browns, but I also know that there's an opportunity there unlike any other place that has an opening, meaning the city is starved for such a winning combination that if you could pull that off, it is a big, big, big deal in that city. You know, in San Francisco, if you get the job, you're the guy following Jim Tomsula, who had the unenviable task of following Jim Harbaugh. Philadelphia, you get to follow Chip Kelly, but you better win, because while Kelly was let go for a couple of reasons about power hungry and all of those things, he did produce two seasons in his three with a 10-6 record. So you better go and start and produce quick. The Giants already got their man in Ben McAdoo. Tampa Bay looks like it's going to be Dirk Cutter, but we're not known for sure. Tennessee is a very appealing opportunity. You're going to be working with Marcus Mariota. But Cleveland is the town that, if you can win there, can change your legacy. And I think that's something to be said for that. We'll talk about what this means for Johnny Manziel in Cleveland. If I'm Hugh Jackson, I don't want anything near Johnny Manziel. And I'm a Johnny Manziel supporter. I'm a guy that said right from the start that I think he was going to have 1 or 2 years of being really good, really fun, the league would catch up to him. They always seem to. But there would be a moment where he would have success. I have been wrong after 2 years of this guy. If I'm Hugh Jackson, I go nowhere near this. So we'll explore that coming up, as well as some other opportunities in the National Football League. We'll take a look at the playoffs. 800-777-2907. If you want to get into the conversation, also on Twitter, at Tony D Radio. But tonight, a number of people are rich due to Powerball. Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
This guy's on. That too. Back to the Quick and Load Studios. And back to Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us here on Yahoo Sports Radio as we continue through the night. 800-777-2907. All right, I'm a little nervous because Sandy from Memphis wants to give picks this upcoming weekend. I'm thinking weekend. You're not going to go, like, obscure college basketball on me, are you, Sandy?
No, Tony, I got four NFL picks, four NFL playoff games coming up Saturday and Sunday, starting with Kansas City at New England. I got Kansas City to pull the upset against the Patriots, 27-20, and I got Seattle in a low-scoring game against Carolina, 17-13. And I got Green Bay in the wild one out in Arizona, 31-24 of Arizona. And I got Pittsburgh to pull the upset out in Denver. Matter of fact, I got Pittsburgh winning that game 17-12.
17-12?
Yes, yeah, so both of them games going to be a low-scoring game between that Pittsburgh and Denver game.
I think so, too.
And that Carolina and Seattle game. And I got Seattle winning the Super Bowl. It's going to be Seattle versus Pittsburgh.
Wow. A rematch of Super Bowl 40.
Yes, it could be another repeat, so I got Seattle winning their second Super Bowl.
All right, well, it wouldn't be a repeat, but it would be 2 out of 3, so that's good enough.
And Tony D, I want to ask you, how was your New Year's? I know it passed. I didn't get a chance to talk to you.
New Year's was good. I actually was here when the clock struck midnight in Central Time where I live, and I was did the college football wrap-up New Year's Eve thing, but other than that, it was good. It's good times.
And Tony, I ain't gonna hope you're lying, but the Cleveland Browns, actually, if they can get them a good quarterback, but their offense not bad, their defense can just need a little more work. Yeah, their defense can upgrade just a little bit. They can, but the problem I get, Cleveland Browns can't establish no good head coach and a good quarterback. If Cleveland Browns,
no consistency.
Yes. If they can get them a steady head coach and a steady quarterback, Cleveland Browns can compete with Pittsburgh and Baltimore. And one more thing, I'm looking for the Baltimore Ravens to have a better record next season, 10-3.
Yeah.
I'm looking for Baltimore Ravens not to have the record next season like that.
I agree with that. Thanks, Sandy. Good talking to you, my man. That's a pretty good call by Sandy.
A lot of upsets.
Let's go over them real quick. He had New England beating Kansas City?
No, Kansas City losing. Winning.
You know,
Kansas
no, no, City no. He had Kansas City winning.
Yep.
He had Arizona winning, but a wild one, he said. A low-scoring game between Seattle and Carolina. I could see that, but I'd be really disappointed if that was the case. Like, I kind of want to see Russell Wilson and Cam Newton just go mano a mano, back and forth, 34-31 type of game. I would really hope that would be the case. But I could see both defenses playing really, really well. Pittsburgh and Denver, I think, is going to be a low-scoring game. I'm not trusting either offense to do all that, you know, all that stuff. The Pittsburgh Steelers going to the Super Bowl. If not this landmine, then definitely the Foxborough or, you know, Kansas City landmine is waiting them. They're just too beat up. I don't know where they get healthy. Now, Antonio Brown could come back for the AFC title game. If he's out this game, he could proceed through the concussion protocol and come back. And D'Angelo Williams may actually emerge, get a little healthier. But Roethlisberger, I mean, I don't know what they're going to shoot him up with, but it's probably going to be a lot for this game against Pittsburgh. But I don't know how he goes downfield. I really do not know how in the world he goes downfield, because he couldn't do it at all on that final drive. Now, a week that you get a lot of rest on it, get some ice on it, get it evaluated, but I just don't know. I mean, I'm not a medical guy, so I don't know if it's possible. But the idea of seeing him slinging it around is not I'm not envisioning this. But the cool thing about Roethlisberger, if you're a Steelers fan, is that his whole career he's been injured. He is a walking MASH unit. I mean, he has got injuries everywhere. But he's always been a little tongue-in-cheek with the injuries. So you could say, oh, Ben Roethlisberger, I don't know how he's going to get around on that bum foot. And you find out it wasn't as bad as he indicates. He hides that kind of stuff well. So maybe he's playing a little bit of a head game here. I don't know. But he didn't look all that good against the Bengals on that final drive, dinking and dunking his way down the field. I don't know how he does it against his Broncos defense. No, I got Denver in that game. I think Seattle can upset Carolina. That's easy. Listen, that anybody who says I can see the upset, I don't even think it's an upset if Seattle beats Carolina. We're talking about a two-time Super Bowl a participant. Seattle's 10-6, but got better at the end of the season. They're not the same kind of team that struggled at 5-5 to be at, to start the year. Carolina's very, very good, no doubt about it, but there's no lock in this league. 15-1 doesn't mean your head and shoulders better than anybody you face. If Green Bay beats Arizona, I'll be very surprised. But I could see Kansas City upsetting the Patriots. The problem with predicting that is that you're predicting Kansas City upsetting a Patriots team that is now healthy. You know what the question, though, is not being answered? Is how healthy? Edelman's coming back. Sebastian Vollmer is coming back. I think they got another guy that's on his way back. Look, how healthy, though? That's the key. It's one thing to have them ready. It's what percentage of them are healthy. So, but if the Kansas City Chiefs do not have Jeremy Maclin, I can't see them pulling this off. Even though they have found ways to use other guys in the passing game. But like Justin Houston isn't practicing, it's precautionary. Tom Bahali isn't practicing, it's precautionary. They're trying to get themselves really, really healthy going into this game against the Patriots. But no one's a hotter team than the Chiefs. No one. 11 in a row. You know when they last lost? The last time the Kansas City Chiefs lost was October 18th. The Kansas City Royals looked dead in the water against the Astros around that time. And instead, the Chiefs have ripped off 11 in a row. But I'm going to enjoy all of these games. But as a Steeler fan, even though I'm like mentally conceding that the Steelers' task is daunting, that game is going to be hard. That game is going to be really, really hard. Just because what could have been? Injuries stink. God, it takes so much. And this is why I hate the 18-game argument. I love football as much as the next guy. I just don't need to see 50 weeks of it. It's just too brutal of a sport. The more you add on, I mean, not only am I convinced that the NFL shouldn't have 18 games during its regular season. I don't even know if 16 should be. I mean, there's just injury after injury after injury. I mean, if I could wave a magic wand and get injuries, I would, because I love to see the matchups that I want to see. I mean, I am getting a less than Steeler team that is going to Denver to face the Broncos. And I remember saying this on Sunday night. If the Cincinnati Bengals just kept their cool, we'd have better games coming up this weekend. Better games coming up this weekend. We'd have New England taking on Cincinnati. We'd have Kansas City going to Denver to face Peyton Manning, the guy they kicked out of the season when they turned the ball over 5 times. And if there was a team that is absolutely poised to beat the Denver Broncos, it's Kansas City. If Cincinnati had just held on to that game, I think we'd have better matchups. Now we got a Chiefs team going to face the Patriots, and that could be a pretty good game. But a beat-up Steeler team against Denver, I think it's practically giving the Broncos a bye week. 800-777-2907. Tony D on the Nighttime Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
All right, so we were talking about Hugh Jackson getting hired by the Cleveland Browns. Great hire for the Browns. They do something right. It comes, though, with the Johnny Manziel question. So now the question people are asking is, all right, so Hugh Jackson is an offensive guy, offensive coordinator at Cincinnati, had 1 year as head coach of the Oakland Raiders. He's going to go to Cleveland. Cleveland has a tendency to fire guys quickly. So if you're Hugh Jackson, are you okay with properly evaluating Johnny Manziel? I think you abandon the Johnny Manziel project, and I think you do it quickly. I don't think this is even a question mark. I want Johnny Manziel to succeed. I think he's fun, and I just kind of want to stick it to the snotty people that are like, I just don't like the way Johnny Manziel conducts himself. I got more things to worry about than Johnny Manziel's college antics, okay? And I'm not going to wish a guy career failure because I didn't like the fact that he danced in a Scooby-Doo costume on Halloween in College Station. I mean, this was before the alcohol and all that other stuff. People just didn't like the way he carried himself. I have other things to worry about. So if I'm Hugh Jackson, though, I had 2 years of this guy already in the books in Cleveland, right? So I kind of know that the team has already put up with him for 2 years. I'm looking at the draft. I got the number 2 pick in the draft. Am I going to try to make a Johnny Manziel work in a place where we haven't been able to figure out how to make it work? Or do I go get my quarterback in the draft? Or do I go get a veteran guy and still get my quarterback in the draft? I don't know. This changes everything. For the record, I never liked the way Cleveland treated Johnny Manziel throughout most of the season anyway. If you're going to play him, play him. I know that he let them down on a number of occasions, and I kind of get that. But it was amazing how many opportunities they didn't want him to have, given that they did draft him in the first round. And that's an expensive mistake. And yet we still feel like we don't have enough of body of work on Manziel's career yet. But if I'm Hugh Jackson, I think I have to turn the page. Even if I hear good things from his teammates who say, hey, you know what? You know, the kid's struggling and he needs a chance. I think if I'm Hugh Jackson, I go, you know what? I'm not going down with this ship. And I don't want a season. I think this is where the crux of it. If I'm him, I don't want a season that is defined by Johnny Manziel's success. I need it to be about our success. I can't have the story in my first year in trying to rebuild the Cleveland Browns. I cannot have the story day in and day out be the Johnny Manziel Express and where it's going. I just can't. I'd rather go into the draft and get a kid that, let's say I'm willing to give the reins of the franchise to a Jared Goff, let's say, just like Marcus Mariota. We take him, we make him the starter. This is where we're heading. Okay. If we get Josh Gordon back on board, all that stuff. We got this young team, we've got pieces that could work. Okay. But I'm running that from the day he's drafted to the day I'm fired. I am not interested in carrying your mistakes. I didn't come here to deal with your mistakes, to fix your problems. And your problem is we drafted Johnny Manziel. We don't know what to do with him. The last guy here didn't want him and never made a move to give him an opportunity. And then he squandered all of his chances. If I'm Hugh Jackson, I say, that's on you. I don't want that. And that's not why I'm here. Is it expensive? Yes. Did you pay him money that you wish you didn't have to pay? Yes. Did you end up blowing the pick? Yes. But today is the day we are turning the page of this franchise, and we're going to do it with a quarterback I choose. You didn't hire me for my good looks, and you didn't hire me for my stellar record as a head coach in the NFL. I've only got one season, and that was an 8-8 campaign. You hired me because I know offenses. I know how to get offenses clicking. I know how to get yards and plays, and I know how to up-tempo a little bit. Give me the quarterback I want, and it is easier for you to get that out of me. Saddle me with a guy that I can't work with, or I can't make better, or I can't improve, then guess what's going to happen? You're frustrated, I'm not winning games, I get fired, and nobody in this room really wants any of those things to take place. If I'm Hugh Jackson, that's exactly where I go. And I don't even know. I mean, to be honest with you, I'm not even sure where the answer is for the quarterback for him. Does he go out and get a decent enough free agent that's got a little bit of veteran experience? Does he take a kid in the draft and hand the reins over, willing to sacrifice the first year of a could be a lousy record? Listen, I think if you're a Cleveland Browns fan, I think you can wait this one out. I really do. I mean, if I grabbed five Cleveland Browns fans and said, I got a deal for you. Your team is going to hire a really smart offensive guy and a guy people genuinely like for his football brains. A guy that people are going to say, right hire. And then he's going to go into the draft and he's going to pick his quarterback with that second pick. And it could be Paxton Lynch. It could be Jared Goff. It could be, you know, whatever. And you're going to have to wait. Just like people in Tennessee are going to have to wait. And just like people in Tampa Bay are going to have to wait. And just like people at Oakland are going to have to wait as Derek Carr continues to impress. And people in Jacksonville are going to have to wait as Blake Bortles continues to get better. You're going to have to wait. But boy, the waiting, you're going to watch, you're going to go to those games on Sunday and you're going to watch your team and you're going to say, wow, this is going to be good. It's not good today, but this is going to be good. I'll tell you right now, it's happening in Nashville. It's happening in Tampa. It's happening in Jacksonville. And those teams didn't even sniff the playoffs. But if you're a Jacksonville Jaguars season ticket holder, there's got to be a belief that good things are coming. If you're a Tennessee Titans season ticket holder, you don't have a GM or a coach. And yet there's a feeling like this could be something good, that this kid could be something legit. Tampa Bay, same thing. Would you take that? I would. My God, what do I have to lose? My franchise has been an embarrassing mess. The league is set up so that you don't live in the cellar. You're not supposed to dwell there. You're supposed to visit. You're supposed to maybe take a brief break there. You're not supposed to reside there. You're not supposed to camp there. I mean, not only are the Cleveland Browns in the basement, they have already picked out drapes. They've already bought their own furniture and heck, maybe even put in some indoor plumbing. They are such longtime residents that they don't even know what the upstairs looks like. So if you've got a coach that everybody likes, that everybody says, this is an offensive guy, this is a guy that can get our offense working, this is the guy, if you give him the tools that he wants, he is going to do great things. What's two or three more years? Come on, Cleveland, what's two or three more years? The Tennessee Titans stink, but next year, I'm not embarrassed to take my kids to a game. Heck, they may lose 30-15, but I may see something remarkable with Marcus Mariota. I'll take the gamble. It's worth the gamble. Tampa Bay, same kind of situation. Cleveland doesn't have that situation. Why? Because they don't know and have never been able to get a solid quarterback guided by a smart coach that can marry those two worlds together for success. It's retreads, bad guys, guys that are okay but not great, with coaches that are not geared to get the best out of them. They go draft a franchise quarterback that they believe. What do they give him in 2 years? A handful of games, big mistake, rehab problems, discipline issues. This guy can clean that up, but you got to cut Johnny Football. Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
All right, thanks for joining us here on Yahoo Sports Radio. I know we don't take that many calls on this show, but if you'd like to ever get into the involved in the program, 800-777-2907. And, you know, we're pretty loose here. If something's on your mind and we're talking about Johnny Manziel and you want to talk about the Cowboys draft, you know, we're good. We're all friends here on the overnight. Did you hear what happened to Lawrence Phillips? God.
Oh, that's sad.
Sad. Guess he committed suicide, or they believe it's suicide, but there was no, I don't think it was a note or anything. Apparently, from what I read, and I didn't read a lot into it, I just kind of read kind of the bullet points. He got sentenced for life and was facing the death penalty for the death of his cellmate while he was in prison, and this may have led to his suicide. Kind of sad. Lawrence Phillips was spent a couple of years in the NFL. I think he was with the Rams. God, who else was he with? I think he was with San Francisco for a bit. But I remember him at Nebraska. I don't think his NFL career was all that eye-popping. But I remember at Nebraska, he helped the Cornhuskers beat the Florida Gators in the 1995 National Championship game. They ran over Florida. The defense buried Danny Werfel into the ground. They were going to plant him like corn. But anyway, there was controversy of whether Lawrence Phillips, who had gotten in trouble, should have played in that game against the Gators. And Tom Osborne decided to play him in that game. So he ended up being in jail for he was in jail, and I guess he got in trouble with a driving incident where he kind of had assaulted his girlfriend, and he was also driving recklessly or running over somebody or something along those lines. So he's had a really, really, really troubled past. He was arrested in school for a domestic violence issue, and Tom Osborne had dismissed him from the team, but then changed it to like a 6-game suspension. And then in the national championship game, he came in and had 3 touchdowns against the Florida Gators. But I guess he was facing the death penalty for this death of this cellmate, and ended up committing suicide in jail. It's really sad. Really sad. I always like the stories that, you know, listen, I got a soft spot in my heart for guys who turn their lives around. All right. I think when you have a guy that legitimately turns his life around, I think the story is better. It's a cautionary tale. I just saw that like Maurice Clarett's gotten into trouble, which was really sad because I watched Youngstown Boys, and it looked like he was really taking on the role of being a mentor to young kids and teaching them the pitfalls of what he went through. And I like that kind of story. I always like those. I've dealt with a lot of those stories. Yeah, you do this for a living. You get pitched a lot of books. Me, not so much now, but you know, back when I was in Colorado, you get pitched books. And a lot of times some will catch your eye. Oh, I know that athlete. Or that athlete has a significance here in the market that I'm in. This person is, you know, would be interesting. And a lot of the books that I used to get pitched were redemptive stories. Former athletes that had it all, lost it all, gained it back, found their lives doing something else, found a calling doing something else. They were either baseball stars or, heck, even getting involved in professional wrestling or all along those lines. I like those redemptive stories. It never turned out that way for Lawrence Phillips, never. He went into prison and ended up being a hardened criminal. And that's sad. That's sad. And now he's gone. 800-777-2907. 800-777-2907. So we've got 2 hires in the NFL, in the coaching circle. So what teams are out there that we don't have coaches for? What's the list right now?
San Francisco.
Philly. Tennessee. Philly. Tampa Bay. Because that's not official yet.
Right. Tampa Bay.
Is that it?
I'm trying to think. So.
I think that might be it. With the hires of the Giants And
Giants, Dolphins, and Browns.
Giants, Dolphins, and Browns have all hired. Let me run down the list real quick. You know, see, in the good radio world, I would have prepped this out pretty good. But instead, I'm going off the fly. Right now, as I look through, Tennessee, no one in the West. Philadelphia, the Giants already got their guy. Nobody in the North. Jim Caldwell's still safe.
As of this second.
As of right now, he's still safe. All right, just making sure. Tampa Bay and San Francisco. Yeah, okay. So which job? Like we talked about Hugh Jackson. He could have had, I think he could have had a number of jobs. I think he could have waited and still had his pick of next year's jobs. But he takes the Browns. Are the Browns the best job on the market? No. But if you win there, you're legendary. Of those four teams, which job is the best? You've got two teams with rookie quarterbacks. You got a Philadelphia team that may need stripped down and kind of reorganized. You've got a San Francisco team that you've got the Colin Kaepernick issue there. You're gonna have to, you know, maybe that becomes a GM problem. I don't know, but you got money there that you're gonna have to figure out how to get back. I like the Tampa Bay job.
Yeah, I like the Tampa Bay job too, because there's offensive talent outside of Jameis Winston, which, you know, can definitely speed things up.
Tennessee's got too many issues. Like, you go to Tennessee, you got Marcus Mariota, but man, you got a lot of holes. You got a lot of problems. And you remember, you have an ownership group that wasn't patient with Ken Whisenhunt. I don't know how the new GM and new management is going to be patient with you. Tampa Bay's the same deal. I mean, they fired Lovie Smith quick, but I think there's more to work with in Tampa Bay. San Francisco, no. And Philadelphia, volatile market on the cusp. Yahoo Sports Radio.